Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 8, 2016. The outgoing head of the UN mission in South Sudan says the violence in the country discourages international donors.
Many of the donors are saying, no, we want to be sure that peace is really there in South Sudan before we invest too much. I think the UN agencies are trying the best they can, but I have to tell you that we get our money from the donors.
And South Sudanese Americans cast their votes in the historic U.S. presidential election.
Well, I think the country will be in a good hand if we vote for Hillary Clinton. And I think that people don't talk about history that the United States is making, but I think this will be a historic election if we elect a woman.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An opposition politician in South Sudan is calling for an inclusive national dialogue to reconcile South Sudanese communities divided by years of conflict. Anyoti Odigo, who was elected leader of the Democratic Party last weekend, says he will work with what he calls peace-loving parties to restore peace. Odigo says he is calling on South Sudanese to forget their differences and work to bring institutional reforms in the country. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Speaking in Juba today at the celebration of his election as a leader of Democratic Change Party, Anyoti Odigo says the South Sudan conflict has created rifts and weakened relations between the country's communities. He says a national dialogue is needed to address the lack of trust among South Sudan's ethnic communities.
There is a token breakdown of our national unit identity, and our social fabric has been torn apart. We need to cement this only by national dialogue. People killing themselves, I think it needs a lot of work. People have to accept that there is a need for national inclusive dialogue.
Odigo says a majority of South Sudanese families now find it difficult to provide basic necessities, including food, health care, and education for their children due to the economic crisis in the country. He says the country's leaders should use its bountiful natural resources for the benefit of all South Sudanese.
Because if there was peace, we would have been able to diversify our economy. Because we are a gifted country, our water is the best water in the world. Most of half of the Nile is passing through us. We can utilize this water. We are gifted with animals, wild animals, where we can encourage tourism. We have got livestock. Livestock now, I think, if we are not the first in Africa, we should be the second in livestock. But we are so blind in mind, and we are not able to utilize this livestock economically.
The South Sudan government currently depends on oil export for up to 98% of its revenues. Odigo says that has to stop.
We are not utilizing our think tanks properly. Some of them do things, but there nobody is listening to them. All countries are guided by their think tanks, which is the opposite in South Sudan. Because in South Sudan, I think everybody is very intelligent and they know. They say, we know it, I know it, when actually they don't know anything.
Before being elected leader, some party members complained that Odigo was making decisions and communicating with the ruling SPLM party as though he was the party leader. Odigo has served as a minority leader in South Sudan's National Assembly since 2010. The Democratic Change Party was founded by Lama Kol in 2009 to compete in 2010 Sudanese general elections against the ruling SPLM. The DC party holds seats in the National Assembly. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A top UN official in South Sudan says unless the guns fall silent, it will be difficult for international community to fund developmental projects in the country. The special representative of the UN Secretary General and the head of the UN mission in South Sudan, Helene Margaret Loy, says food shortages and the economic crisis will remain a major challenge as long as South Sudanese continue to fight each other. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit.
Margaret Loy arrived in Torit this morning for a one-day farewell visit to Imotongi State as her tenure comes to an end later this month. Loi says as much as donors want to support the development of South Sudan, they will only do so in a peaceful environment. She says it is shameful that as soon as South Sudan got its independence, South Sudan's leaders frustrated all the efforts and support of the international community by dragging the country back into violence.
Many of the donors are saying, no, we want to be sure that peace is really there in South Sudan before we invest too much, but we have to meet the urgent need. So I think the UN agencies are trying the best they can, but I have to tell you that we get our money from the donors and the international community. And the money we have to use for development activities, the World Food Program, FAO and others, that is what we call voluntary contributions. So if they're not ready and they say, no, we'd rather give it to other parts of the world, then we don't get it, even for the humanitarian appeal.
Loi also expressed concern about deteriorating humanitarian conditions, even in areas that have not been directly affected by the recent conflict.
The challenge we have in South Sudan, and I will be very honest with you, is that because of the conflict erupting in 13 and the continuous violence and fighting, while the economy and the food situation is deteriorating, we now have humanitarian needs in South Sudan, which is growing as we speak. I visited Northern Balghazal recently. There's been no fighting in Northern Balghazal, huh? There's not much conflict because they all belong to the same ethnic group. Nevertheless, food insecurity is increasing on a daily basis. And the people in Northern Balghazal, well, and further, are crossing the border into the Sudan just to get food.
Imotongi State Governor Nartiso Loluke urged the head of UNMISS to convince the international community not to abandon South Sudan.
We in this country, we in this state, we need your assistance. And your assistance, first, is the work of peace. The second one is to see how together with the other international financial institutions, how this country can come out of the situation where it is today. And it is through your efforts, it is through your recommendation, that the people, especially the children, will be able to see the role of the UN, the role of the government, the role of the World Bank.
Loi says in order for the UN and other agencies to focus on developing South Sudan, the country's leaders must first restore peace.
Let the guns be silent so we can focus on a better future for the boys and girls of South Sudan. We need peace in South Sudan. We need it not tomorrow. We needed it yesterday. And also in this part of the country, unfortunately, there's too much violence. There's too much criminality. It simply has to stop so we can build the future for the people of South Sudan.
She also urged the government to allow the UN and other aid agencies access to hundreds of thousands of people in desperate need for relief aid. Loi is expected to leave the country at the end of November. A replacement for Loi has yet to be named by the UN. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
A South Sudanese refugee leader in Kiriadongo settlement camp in Uganda says South Sudanese refugees fight over water and other ethnic-related disputes. Simon Apiku visited Kiriadongo and has these details for VOA from Kampala, Uganda.
Insufficient water in the settlement means fighting is common among refugees at water points. At certain locations, hundreds of families share a single borehole. Refugee leaders say what begins as a squabble over water often escalates into ethnic tensions. The leaders say they are also concerned about rising incidents of domestic and gender-based violence as well as criminal activities. Santos Gama is the leader of one of many refugee welfare committees set up to keep peace in the settlement.
Mostly we are dealing with settling cases, violence in the cluster.
Gama heads a committee of 9 people responsible for the welfare of some 600 refugees. He says the committee does not have judicial powers to handle cases brought to them.
If we try to settle, because we sometimes find them little money, if we find them and then we sensitize them with my community, committees mostly, and then some they go back, and then at least it take time. It take long time to start another violence.
Gama says youth cause the most trouble in the settlement, largely because thousands of young people are out of school and engage in bad habits, including drug and alcohol abuse.
Most of them, they are loitering, especially in the center, like the Molo Point Center. They are loitering around, they don't do anything.
Gama says idle youth are often responsible for stirring up tensions in the settlement. He says he is concerned about certain individuals and groups who want to cause trouble in the settlement.
Let me say direct, this system of tribalism is still here. It is still there. Because if I can remember 2 months back, even those tribe like Nuer community, they fought.
He notes that the refugee welfare committees do not take on all the cases brought before them. He says the committee refers those cases resulting in serious bodily harm or sexual abuse to other authorities.
Wrapping that case, we cannot handle it here. And then we forward the case maybe to direct to police.
Refugees in the settlement enjoy a higher level of safety and security compared to the situation they fled. But leaders like Gama say they are worried children are embracing alien cultures. He says parents are finding it harder to discipline their sons and daughters. Young boys, Gama argues, use a lot of profanity in their speech, while girls dress indecently.
And boys also, they like to dress recklessly, decorating some dizzy hairs and so on.
Gama says he also regrets the rapid erosion of his people's customs and traditions in the refugee settlement, saying many have lost their culture while growing up in Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Kiriadongo District, Uganda.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at Zika antibodies. That story is coming up.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan, or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what types of behavior are not acceptable in politicians?
The act of lying to people to get what you want, and at the end of the day, not serving the people.
If a politician maybe wants something or wants votes, does not mean you have to go create chaos around or you fight your opponent. No, it's not supposed to be like that. Do things in your own way, but in a peaceful manner.
A politician should not be aggressive to the public. A politician should not boast about himself. He should not be always talking about himself that I'm doing this and this and this.
Not being truthful and honest, because you tell somebody one thing and you're able to convince them, and then when you come to power, you're doing a different thing. Then it kind of disappoints them.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are discussing the Zika virus. There has been a breakthrough in the search for a treatment for Zika virus. Researchers have discovered an antibody that dramatically reduces infection with Zika, one that potentially could be fashioned into a vaccine to protect pregnant women and men against the mosquito-borne virus. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
It's called ZIKV-117, an antibody or immune system protein that researchers isolated from a patient who'd been infected with the Zika virus. In a study in pregnant mice infected with the mosquito-borne pathogen, ZIKV-117 protected the fetus against infection. The antibody, which stimulates a robust immune response against the virus, neutralized all Zika strains that were tested. The amount of virus in the mouse mothers was greatly reduced, decreasing levels of the pathogen found in fetal placental and brain tissue. Infected male mice given a single dose of ZIKV-117 were more likely to survive than untreated mice, even 5 days after Zika infection, suggesting the antibody could treat an active infection. The discovery was made by researchers at Washington University School of Medicine in Missouri and Vanderbilt University in Tennessee and reported in the journal Nature. Zika can cause severe birth defects, most notably microcephaly, in the babies of women who are infected with the virus during pregnancy. Newborns with microcephaly have an abnormally small head and brain. Zika also is thought to cause a rare, crippling neurological condition in adults called Guillain-Barré syndrome. Michael Diamond is a microbiologist and immunologist at Washington University and a senior co-author of the study. He says this is the first time any sort of treatment for Zika has been found.
Before this study, there had been no vaccine or no any other study that had done anything in pregnant animals to show that anything could abort or prevent a disease. So one thing this does is suggest that antibodies are able to do it, and this actually bodes well for future vaccine efforts.
The antibody proved to be effective in the lab at neutralizing 5 different strains from around the world. The virus is spreading through the Americas, from Brazil to through Central America, and cases have been reported in the United States. Diamond says ZIKV-117 could be developed into a drug that could be used in a number of ways.
Either you give it before somebody went into a high-risk area, if they were traveling, or early and as soon as they knew they were pregnant and they were not infected already, or if they were pregnant and then got infected but it was early in their stage of infection, you might be able to administer it and still have beneficial effects.
Diamond says researchers are now preparing to test the antibody in monkeys, a process that he says could take 6 to 9 months. If those experiments are successful, human trials could begin soon after that. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Millions of Americans are heading to the polls today to cast their votes in what has been the most divisive presidential election in modern U.S. history. South Sudanese and Sudanese-American voters appear to have a favorite candidate, while many say Republican Donald Trump could be tougher on American-South Sudanese relations. They also say they are reluctant to vote for him because of his anti-immigrant rhetoric. Ayan Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
Every 4 years after the first Monday in November, millions of Americans decide who should be president. It's been a long, bitterly fought campaign season. Democrat Hillary Clinton was under investigation for her private and business email use while serving as U.S. Secretary of State. She was accused of possibly exposing classified government information, but later cleared of any official wrongdoing. Republican Donald Trump said he'd build a wall between the U.S. and Mexico and called immigrants rapists and criminals. After speaking to a small sample of 30 Sudanese and South Sudanese voters from around the country, this program did not find a single person planning to vote for Trump. For voters like Ayen Deng Bulayig, a registered Democrat from the eastern state of Virginia, the choice was clear months ago. She says Clinton's record as former Secretary of State was the main reason she cast her vote for the Democratic candidate. She says she's glad it's finally Election Day.
From the time the election started, you know, on this campaign, it's been too much, you know, especially seeing so many negativity. That's, you know, America is a great country. So, and we want a president who brings unity, not the way it has been, you know, you understand.
Deng says she's been impressed with Clinton's ability to hold her composure throughout her campaign.
And she has more qualification than Donald Trump. And I believe that the great message she been conveying to the people of America is more clear than the other side.
Ali McKay from the Midwestern state of Ohio, who is a native of Sudan, says he voted early for Hillary Clinton.
Hillary, she had a good vision to take the country forward, not like the crazy guy, Donald Trump. Both because I'm immigrant, I came from, you know, like part of Africa with a lot of conflict. And when he talked about other people, Muslims, Somalis, other people, he's talking bad things about them. He's saying, like, saying they're not supposed to be in this country, blah, blah, blah. So that's why, you know, it's not like my type.
For young naturalized South Sudanese and Sudanese Americans, many of whom are the children of parents of refugees and immigrants, voting puts them one step closer to achieving the American dream. Hassan Abdullah is from the Midwestern state of Indiana, which is considered a Republican state, and supports Clinton.
There is no way I can even think vote for Trump. So that's why I just vote for Hillary. I like the program, like the foreign policy, and I like the even in domestic, there is a lot going on, and like Obamacare, which can be continued by Hillary if she become a president.
Gabriel Ajong, a registered Republican in the Midwestern state of Nebraska, says he'll cross party lines to vote for Clinton. He says he listened intensely to Trump during the election season, but was disappointed when the businessman from New York came up short on social, fiscal, and foreign policies.
I'm a conservative by values, but I disagree with Trump's policies, especially toward Africa and his domestic policies. He had no specific policy toward Africa, the country that I, you know, like Southern Sudan, the country that I cared for. And there are no policies that is specifically laid out, especially he actually say that he's going to like abolish North America trade agreement, and he did not actually lay out what would be alternative. The same apply to Affordable Care Act, and he just say I'm going to like, you know, issue an executive order and never tell us, you know, what would be, you know, the substitute, the policy that would replace, you know, the health care act. So
Ajong says it is exciting to cast his vote for the first female to be nominated for president by a major party.
I think the country will be in a good hand if we vote for Hillary Clinton. We'll be voting for the first female president. And I think that people don't talk about history that the United States is making. But I think this will be a historic election if we elect a woman.
Hillary Clinton cast her vote early in her home state of New York. Donald Trump, who is also from New York, cast his vote later in the day. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
VOA fellow Nadia Taha contributed to this report in Washington. Both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump campaigned for votes in several states yesterday on the eve of perhaps the most polarizing election in modern U.S. history. Polls show Clinton with a modest but steady lead, both nationally and in several key battleground states that will largely determine the outcome of today's voting. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the candidates and their final push for support.
Make noise!
Hillary Clinton began her last day on the campaign trail in Pennsylvania, a state she's counting on to become the next president. After a long and divisive campaign, Clinton delivered a more upbeat message on the eve of the election.
Anger is not a plan, my friends. If we're going to harness our energy and try to overcome our problems, then we got to start talking to each other again. And we have to get good ideas wherever they come from.
Clinton got a boost Sunday when the FBI cleared her for a second time in connection with her use of a private email server while Secretary of State. Clinton had plenty of help in the final hours of campaigning, including from President Barack Obama.
God bless these United States of America. Let's go vote.
Obama rallied supporters in Michigan, where some polls show a tightening race. Republican Donald Trump began his day in Florida, a must-win state for him if he's to defy national polls and pull off a come-from-behind victory. Trump tried to turn the latest news on the FBI and Clinton to his benefit.
Hillary Clinton is being protected by a totally rigged system. And now it's up to the American people to deliver justice at the ballot box tomorrow. That's what's going to happen.
Trump also had help from his daughter Ivanka, who campaigned in Pennsylvania.
My father is very forthright. You know where he stands.
The outcome will hinge largely on voter turnout, says strategist Matt Gammon.
You need to remind people why the other one is a worse choice than you are. And it gives everyone kind of a bad taste in their mouth, and it's not what we like to think of when we think of how campaigns are run. But unfortunately, that's just the way that this looks like it's going to end.
No matter who wins, the next president faces enormous challenges in trying to unify the country, says historian Alan Lichtman.
Assuming it's Donald Trump, he's got to way tamp down his rhetoric. He can't talk about locking up his political opponents.
But Lichtman says a Clinton victory would also be a test of her political skills.
She is going to have to come up with policies and programs that could at least attract a segment of the Republican opposition.
Democrats have shown some strengths in several states with early voting, but Trump supporters insist their passion will lead to a big turnout on Tuesday. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
And that's the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Heart Attack by Radio and Whistle. Hossa, hossa. We've been listening to Radio and Whistle with the song We Heart Attack. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could join us. Tune in again at this same time tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Let me say,